Blog Talk Radio.
On the Edge, real talk about real issues.
Welcome, everybody, to the On the Edge show. A little delay here in the start. Sorry about that. I want to thank God for another day of being here. I want to thank all of my social media groups. I want to thank my starting panelists, Patrick Irvine, Professor Carlton Jones, Taylor Jenkins, Altariq Atkins, Darlene and Arlene, our newest addition, Ms. Erica Talbert. I want to thank all of you that are out there, Mr. Mark Pittman, our sponsor, and his two groups, Black History Suppressed and the Real World Blackness and Discussions Group, Ms. Linda Miller with the Black Love and Conversations for her never-ending support. Thanking my team, Lady Diamond, Elaine Yeves, Monster Miles, DJ Domrecker, Rodney Williams, and Deacon Zeddy Williams of Toledo, Ohio. Thank you all very much for all that you do. To Barry Mason, formerly of 98.7 Kiss FM Radio in New York, currently with iSoulRadio.com. You can hear Barry do his thing Saturday nights from 7 to 10 p.m. and Sundays from 6 to 10 p.m. giving you the best of live old and new R&B, love songs, dance classics, everything you could think of. He's got it going on. Thanking all of you for last night's wonderful conversation. We were discussing Black reparations. Is it long overdue? We were speaking on empowerment of our people. Today we're going to be speaking on another important aspect of our culture, our community, and our society. We're going to call it today State of the Black Youth. That's because of the unique additions to everything that we go through, blacks go through it a little bit more. However, tonight is sort of a more universal problem, and that is when our older children are being pushed over the line from just helping out to learn how to be adults one day to actually being adults, because our modern-day situations have changed us over into actually having these children be parents more than just assisting a parent because they got a little older. That's the question I have on the table tonight. Have modern-day parents, do we as modern-day parents, especially as single people, do we push our children to do more than just teaching them new responsibilities? That is the question on the table tonight. Going out with Katy Perry and Dark Horse featuring Juicy J, a word from our sponsors, and we'll be back to get this party started. So don't go away. We'll be right back.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, y'all know what it is. Katy Perry, Juicy J. Let's rave.
I knew you were gonna come for me.
And here you are,
but you better choose carefully.
Yeah.
I'm capable of anything.
Make me your Aphrodite. Make me your one and only. Don't make me your enemy. Your enemy. Your enemy.
So you wanna play with magic? Boy, you should know what you're falling for. Baby, do you dare to do this? 'Cause I'm coming at you like a dark horse.
Going back.
Show.
going back. She's a beast. I call her karma. She eats your heart out, make Jeffrey dumb. Be careful, try not to lead her on. Shawty heart is on steroids, cause her love is so strong. You may fall in love when you meet her. If you get the chance, you better keep her. She swears by, but if you break her heart, she turns cold as a freezer. That fairy tale ending with a knight in shiny armor. She can be my sleeping beauty, I'm gon' put her in a coma. Damn, I think I love her. Shawty so bad, I sprung and I don't care. She rap me like a roller coaster, turned the bedroom into a fair. Her love is like a drug, I was trying to hit it and quit it. But lil' mama so dope, I messed around and got addicted.
New York, New York. There's no place like it. You figure that out when you find yourself in a bit of trouble while vacationing or visiting in Florida. And Florida cops are sure as heck not like New York City cops. You're feeling more than put out or simply just confused with it all. But you want justice. You need it to be right, and you want someone who understands where you're coming from. You need Kenneth Foote, attorney at law. Graduate of St. John's University and Florida Stetson University, he'll make sure you're back on track and everything's straightened away. Driving violations, personal injury, drug charges, he's here to work with you as well as for you. Leave nothing to chance. K.L. Foote, Attorneys at Law, 877-90-FOOTE or klfoote.com. Kenneth Foote, the New Yorker to contact in Florida.
The On the Edge Show with KD Barnett and friends, the show that gives you real talk about real issues, needs your help. KD and the gang are seeking out individuals and local business sponsors to help fund their projects for youth and minority communities to become re-empowered, featuring programs like the Spread Your Wings Showcase, offering free advertising to up-and-coming entrepreneurs, Youth Day giving public school grades 4 to 12 a taste of the arts, and All Hands on Deck, our new writer's showcase. On the Edge is looking to give back to our communities by giving our youth a future. Your small contribution will make a difference. Individuals or small businesses can choose to be a sponsor for any amount of time. And businesses can also choose to advertise with us at very reasonable rates. Choose any type of show sponsorship and you just may be a sponsor for a life. Visit us at Facebook at facebook.com On the Edge Show for more information on how you can be a part of our vision. We hope to see you there.
Now, back with more On the Edge.
Welcome back, everybody, to the On the Edge show with KD Barnett and friends. Again, I apologize to my listeners for the delayed start. I want to thank you all again for your wonderful messages of support and get well wishes. My mouth is down a little bit. I can actually talk a little better today, everybody. And I do want to say a special thank you to my awesome panelists from last night of The topic was just off the hook, and I definitely believe that, you know, all of you had some great things to say. Tonight is no exception. We are speaking on a very important part that has affected many people for quite some time, those of us that grew up. Some of us had it a little better than others. We speak today about how the youth, the whole culture of our youth has changed. Definitely, we're going to be speaking on this topic, which is universal. However, there are certain unique ways or unique happenings in this subject with the black community, but we are definitely going to be speaking about it on the whole as well. And that is the state of our youth. The parenting child, and what I'm referring to, is when we give responsibility to our elder children. As they get older, we give them a little more to do. And has it gotten to the point nowadays with the way that the adults have changed, those younger parents, the single parenthood increase, in our society, especially among the Black Americans, have it gotten to the point now where it has completely dissolved the line between balancing out teaching our children how to become adults by giving them a little more responsibility or actually having them be parents. And let me first get started out. All of you know I'm a single mom of quite a large family. And what I will say is that I can tell you myself that there are times that whether we are intending to do it or not, that our children do wind up becoming or being put in a role where it's a lot more than just teaching them how to grow up. It's actually putting them in a position where, to a point, they're already grown up. And they're not ready for it, but then they are ready for it. So it's like they're already having conflicts, especially if they're teenagers, already with that alone. But on the other hand, they are trying to deal with a lot more as they're being given. Now, some of them can handle it, but in the end, it turns out to be a little more of an effect on them. So starting off with us as single parents, okay? Single parents, we definitely have it hard, okay? We have to be two parents at once. I see you, Cora. I'll be bringing you in just a minute. We have to be two parents at once at all times, not just the provisions physically, but we have to mentally wear all the hats, and usually the hats that we're supposed to share with the partner who helped us have the babies, okay? We have to constantly be on alert. We have to constantly balance out showing our time equally between all children. And Lord knows if you have more than two children, that is already a challenge. We have to balance out our need to work with still coming home and being parents in the household. Now, parents themselves, we know parenting brings us to the point where it's a never-ending job, thankless job plenty of times. It's a demanding job. There's an extra niche you have to have where there's no tutorials for it, because parenting is not a job that comes with a definitive book that says this is the way you're supposed to do it, this is how you turn the handle, this is the way you turn it on, turn it off. We have to constantly learn as we go. Then we have different children with different personalities, so then we learn how to deal with them. Now let's get to how single parents have to handle it. We have to constantly come home and make sure that no matter what we don't have, our children must always eat. No matter what it is that we have to do, we still have to go to homework, do the homework checks. We have to go to the PTA meetings. We have to watch what our children are doing. We are tired. Society, especially for Black America, is not allowing us to move forward, so we constantly have to take whatever little time we have to constantly find something else to do to fill in the blanks. Financially, emotionally, psychologically, economically, socially. We have to explain to our children that we're not saying no because we don't want to, but we really just don't have the fire to do it, or we really can't do it because there are certain things our children ask for nowadays that we would love to give them but can't. But at the end of the day, we still have to at some point do something. So now we have to depend on either a babysitter, which most of us in this day and age cannot afford, or we're forced dependent on you. Those of you that are on public assistance knows exactly what they're trying to do with you, because nowadays they really don't even want you to have that. So they put every hoop and inhumane and unreasonable clause into your supposed-to-be benefit package. So you have to do that, because the message that they're sending with all these things is that, you know, people on public assistance don't have tired moments. That if they're not doing something that is documented in their records, you're being lazy or you have leisure time. They don't understand that if you have a part-time job that you're working only 25 hours a week, it doesn't mean when that 25-hour shift is over, you don't have an endless 24-hour shift in addition to that. And if you don't do that, they're threatening you to take away the peanuts that there is there. So here you go again. They're trying to help you get on your feet, but they're taking away everything that you can do for yourself. They won't want you on it, But since you are on it, let's take away all your extra time so you can't go out and do anything for yourself. Whatever extras they do allow you is just enough for them to act like you're doing something, but yet they still have control. Now, with all that being said, we have to figure out how we're going to do that and work and take care of our children. So we have older children that are showing some responsibility. They can handle helping with the kids. We have to get to the point now of understanding exactly when it becomes more than just teaching them. When do they actually become parents? So let's get started. It's okay for your older siblings to help out with the younger ones. They can pull out the next day's outfits for school. They can help with the bath here and there. They can help watch the kids. If you have to run to the store, they can do store runs by your instruction, by you giving them a list and telling them, here is what you have to go get. Here's the money to go get it. This is what I expect for you to have. This is what you need to come back with, and this is the change you should have when you get there. Next up, you could teach them to do laundry because, you know what, at a certain age, they should know this already. Teaching them to do some meals, depending on their age, you can even do that pretty young if they're simple meals, nothing with sharp edges, depending on the age, as I said. We're dealing with a stove, so, of course, we have to use our brains in that respect. Holding down the fort if you have to make a run, go to work, there's no babysitter, there's no neighbors that can watch, because our village has definitely been diminished, if it exists at all. We always give them this phrase, you are the man of the house or the lady of the house. Now, here's the problem with that. There's a very thin line with the way that can be interpreted. Telling your child that he's the man of the house or she's the lady of the house can interpret in their mind as, I'm either a man or a woman, or I'm your man or woman. That is where it starts to go wrong. That is where we have to reel it back, no matter how tired we are, no matter how much things are on our plate. And I know it's hard, especially for us that don't have that other half. So the warning signs that we start to see is when our younger children start to look to their older siblings for the instruction of the household over yours. If it gets to that point, they think they're adults, and there's a problem. If you are using your children to babysit so you can have a weekly party habit, that's crossing the line. And that puts effects on them because you cannot unring a bell. Once they have been exposed to having this type of freedom, this type of responsibility, and they think they're grown, it's going to be real hard for you to say, you know what, you don't own me, or you're not the adult. You are a kid. How can they be? If you're trying to get your groove on as their parent and you're leaving them in charge, they're in charge in their mind. When they start asking you after store runs that weren't directly instructed or constructed by parental guidance, that they can ask you how much money is on your credit card, how much money do you have left in your account, there's a problem with that. That means somewhere down the line, their store runs in their head gave them financial freedom to the household, whatever. When they start questioning how you're spending money, there's an issue. When, as I said, I believe, your younger kids start looking to them or fearing what they're going to say when you tell them to do something, we have issues. So now we're going to start off with our caller coming in about what they feel. And then we're going to be speaking in the second half of the segment about how we can offset that. So bringing in our first caller for the evening, 1 second. Welcome to the show, caller. You're on the air.
How are you doing tonight, Katie?
Hi. Who am I speaking with?
This is Erica.
Finally. Where were you? How are you, Mama?
I'm doing outstanding, as usual.
Well, I definitely welcome you to the panel, of course. You were kind of the missing link a little bit, in our previous segment. So what's your take on this? Do you believe that modern-day parents really are kind of overdoing it with teaching responsibility and they're actually crossing the line and allowing our kids to be adults?
Yes, I definitely see that. Now, before I say why I think that, posted on Facebook about when I sit down with my aunt, I love for her to tell me the tales about how she grew up with my great-grandmother and grandmother and mother. And she would tell me how at the age of 12 she had a job, that she used to go to this white lady house and sew and do the cooking, as well as she had to help my great-grandmother around the house. And I love to hear those stories of her being responsible. And behind that, she would always say, the kids today aren't responsible enough. Now, on the flip side of that, the reason why they're not responsible enough is because you have people that don't know how to teach their kids because they don't know, because they haven't been taught how to do those things. I had a best friend. We were best friends for 20 years. We stopped being friends, and we fell out partially behind it. I was a stay-at-home mom or whatever, and I ran as I got out of the military, and when we separated, I stayed with my friend. Her 7-year-old son was washing his own clothes. Her 13-year-old daughter had to cook dinner for everybody. My friend didn't work, and I had an issue with it. Because there's no way a 13-year-old girl should have to fix dinner for the entire family. And there's no way a 7-year-old boy should be washing his own laundry. Because, truthfully, a 7-year-old can't grasp the concept of how much laundry detergent to use when he hasn't been taught.
So the I can mention there's bleach involved with that, too. So, yeah, I think 7 is a little too young. But go ahead. I'm sorry, dear.
Yeah, way too young. And I would have to tell her, like, before I understand, it was one of those, she gave them responsibility because she wanted to be lazy. Back in the day, young kids had responsibility because the parents had other things to tend to. But nowadays, more so, some parents teach their kids responsibility so they could have less to do. Now, again, on the flip side of that, I was total opposite. Because I was a stay-at-home mom after I got out of the military, my kids didn't have enough responsibility because by the time they got home from school, everything was done.
Right.
Because that was my job, to tend to the house. And I would sit back and I would think to myself, why would you make your kids do so much so that you could sit back and be lazy? She had her oldest was 13, her youngest was just a few months. She had 4 different kids by 4 different guys. 3 of the dads were in jail, and one of the dads, she got pregnant on purpose, and he was so bitter behind it that he didn't fool with the baby at all. So that 13-year-old and the one behind that 13-year-old responsibility was to take care of that baby. And the one behind the 13-year-old told me out of her own mouth, I'm not about to keep watching this baby so my mama could go out and make some more babies.
Yeah,
first of all, she was an 11-year-old. 11-year-olds shouldn't even have that in her mind. But since she had to grow up so fast, she knew how her mother moved. Her mother, you know, she watched her mother go out and club and bring home different guys. So we do have a generation of women, single-parent women, raising their kids to be grown. Because it's the difference between being mature and being grown.
Absolutely.
They're raising their kids to be grown. They're showing their kids things. They're not able to enjoy their childhood because they're too busy picking up the slack because sometimes parents, we make bad decisions that affect our kids. And for some people, they make a bad decision by having a child by a guy that's not going to be available emotionally, financially, physically, any of it. So you depend on that oldest sibling or oldest, you know, the oldest one to pick up that emotional and physical responsibility. And it is becoming absolutely too much.
Absolutely, Erica. Now, there are so many different situations in why older siblings get to that point. And I will say this. I do not want to knock those parents, those single parents, that were forced into a situation and doing the best they can and busting their own down. I'm not even going there. So to those of you that do it, I'm one of them. I get it. But even with that situation, there are times when those children, too, take on more than they should have to. And I will tell you this. I share my experiences often on the show because that's why the show was created, because most of the things that I and my co-hosts went through was what facilitated this whole show to happen. So one of the things that I can actually speak from is this. When I started out with my ex, he was a very responsible provider. And I'm going to say provider because everything else after that was foreign to him. Okay? He's Caribbean, which, you know, they have a real strict work ethic. So it's all about the dough. It's all about the money. It's all about the slash. And I guess because that's what he grew up with, you know, the concept of taking your kids out for ice cream on a day where it's not about how many dollars you can put down was foreign to him, but that's where I was. I wasn't working at that time. I was doing things from home. So I sort of filled in a lot of the stuff. So I was kind of like a single mom, even with the other body there. Now, then the next step is, you know, you're kind of a new listener, but those listeners that have been around me have heard my personal story on one of my segments, which was called Victimization, Rest in Peace, Part 1. And we went into a shelter where now I'm totally single. Like, everything was just is on me and the kids. We were under the rules of the shelter, the rules of the city, the rules of the welfare, because we were dealing with that at the time. So then I was going to school full time, and then I was writing a book. So there was like so many things that we had to still deal with. And in the middle of all of that, I still had to be mom. Now, with that being said, we had kind of a unique situation because my family was large. I had two twin newborns at the time. We were in a fifth-floor walk-up apartment because they didn't have any elevators for poor people. It doesn't work like that if you're going to a shelter. And there were a lot of things that they tell you. Listen, you have to watch your children. But in the same token, you have to make sure that you take care of your children because ACS is constantly watching and, you know, you have to do this and all these things. So a lot of the things that my older two children had to do, which is something if I had been in the ideal situation or in a situation not fair, it never would have happened. You know, handing over a financial card because there was no stroller to bring the kids up and down at the time. And mind you, there wasn't one, there was two newborns. So to go up and down five flights of stairs with two newborn babies, no stroller, no carriers, nothing to that effect, was too much. So the store was right down the block. You can see it from where we at. Okay, here's a little list. Go. All right? They handled that pretty well. They started to actually like the feeling of being responsible. Then it got a little worse because now the city turned it up. Now you're on your own. Now you've got to do certain things. There wasn't the village. We didn't have family like that for us to be able to count on and say, you know, go to aunties or go to grandma's or do whatever. It was just us, really just us. There was no facilities. There was no resources, nothing. So what do you do now? Now mom has to go to work, and I'm still going to school, and I'm trying to make an example for you guys, and now I'm trying to get a business started, and now it's all this. You try everything in your power as a single mom and single father to do the best for your kids, and still there's always something that could go wrong, or there's always something, no matter how hard you did, you know, your children still find something with it. So here started to be the point where I noticed with my teens, it started to get to the point where we had open conversations because I always wanted to know where their mindset was. Well, how are you feeling about this? I know this is hard on you, but, you know, it'll be over in a little bit, but just tell me. How are you feeling right now? Now, what happened was as the responsibilities for them grew, never that I was partying or anything, but just that mom had to work and I need to count on you to do this so I can get this paper done, so I can graduate, so I can get this. It started to get to the point where now they're getting to the point where they're feeling their oats as well. So it's like the open conversations turned into the right to say things back or the right to tell me I've been doing this or I'm doing this. So I had to kind of reel certain things in, which will come up in the solution part of the segment. But you really do have to sit back and go, whoa, hey, wait a minute. I didn't see that coming, but it did. Now, I've mentioned all that because that's the part of a parent who wasn't partying or out there to give her kids the reins. So if it could happen with a parent that's trying to do everything they're supposed to do as a single parent, how much more effects will that have on a person who does have to do what that 11-year-old girl you just spoke about has to do?
I agree. You know what, Katie? I was raised, my mother was a single parent mom, and now I'm separated from my ex. I'm a single parent mom. But when I was in high school, I had to cook. It wasn't a matter of that was my responsibility because my mom was a single parent. She made me cook because her thing was that when I got married, a man would not be able to say that I can't cook and keep a house clean. Being from Alabama, of course, you know, you have to fulfill your wifely duties. So my mother threw certain responsibilities on me to make sure that when I was able to be on my own, I would know how to do them. I have nothing but, you know, I admire any woman because I was a single parent mom by the time I finished my degree. But to me, it's the one that you're not working, you're not going to school, you're not doing anything productive in society, and to make it worse, you're not raising your kids to be productive in society. I think a single parent mom that's actually working and, you know, has it thrown responsibility, well, putting some responsibilities off on their kids, that's a difference because they're doing what they have to do to make their family survive. Everybody has
right.
a role to play. When you're
right.
when mom
right.
is working, your role is to make sure that the house is ran smoothly so when she comes home, she's at peace versus mom's at home all day and she's still having some dinner.
Bingo. See, that's the key phrase right there, Erica. There is that it's already a very, very thin line to keep the balance in between giving them responsibility for the sake of contribution to the household, for the sake of teaching them how to, exactly what you said, grow up and do it right for themselves when they get older, to learn how to be properly independent as well as know how to do it for the team. There is a big difference because, like you just said, a single mom working, going to school, doing what she's got to do, the older child is in their rightful milestone of learning these things because they have to contribute to the household to keep it running smoothly. And you know what? If there was a father involved or a parent or a village person involved, that would be a different story. But still, that child would still have certain things to do. For example, when I did have a babysitter come in, she was instructed completely to look after the three younger ones because they were at the time 4 and 5, and the others knew how to do what they had to do. So she wasn't responsible for cleaning their rooms or washing their clothes or doing whatever because they knew to do that. And for it to be any other way would mean that they would start to depend on somebody just doing for them. So there's a big difference between that and, like you said, somebody being at home that don't have a damn thing to do and simply don't want to do anything, and they put it off on the kids. I heard so many ignorant moms. When I tell you the stupidness that comes out of some of these people's mouths, I've been doing it all this time. They grown, too. I'm not walking by doing this. It's time for me to rest. Well, how much rest do you need?
Mm-hmm.
And in turn, what exactly are you teaching your daughters or your sons to grow up and do the same to their kids? To breed them and birth them so that they could grow older and be your workhorses? Isn't that what the white oppressors do to the black community anyway?
I agree. You know what? If I could, any single parent mom that's going to school and, you know, doesn't have that village to help out, it would be a great idea for if you're going to school at night to start up a babysitter's club. Like the single parent mom club movie Tyler Perry had. I didn't see it, but I heard about it. You know, so that if you know someone that's also going to school at night, opposite nights of you, swap out and watch one another kids to help one another
Absolutely.
Out.
Absolutely.
Because at the end of the day, you definitely need that help when you're working and you're going to school. Or even challenge the school, the community college I first started attending, they had a daycare there in nighttime. So challenge your school to say, hey, you know, this is a non-traditional setting when you're going to school at night. Can we start up a child care so that we can have someone to watch our kids?
Or better yet, as a black community, one of the things that we speak about quite often is fighting, learning how to use our mouth to fight for things that other communities have. Now, if we can't start it off with the big capital in your pocket type things, what you just mentioned is perfect. To 3 or 4 like-minded people in similar situations, being able to each one teach one, each one loan one, you know, what is the problem with that? The problem is that we tend to, like I said, most of us go back to, we can become subconsciously dependent on that too. And those of us that are not in it for selfish reasons, eventually we don't
grasp it until we see something that kind of snaps us to reality and go, oh, whoa, wait a minute. I had to go through that just recently. With everything I'm trying to do at this particular time in my mind, I'm doing the best that I can do for my kids, that the ultimate thing would be to show them, regardless to our hardships and our physical circumstances right now, this is the way you look to the tunnel. I understand that eventually this will be something that you could look back on and say, this was my launching pad to a better life, to a success. But in the process of that, things happen. So if you are not trying to do your part as a parent, because regardless to all that you are in, you still, in the middle of all of it, still have to parent. So teaching your kids to get up and cook, but then you're thinking about ways to plot down the line to have them be the cook. It takes a lot of time, and I think us parents forget that, is when you're first teaching your children to do the things they probably admired you doing all these years, like if you're a great cook as a mother and they have a specific favorite dish that they cook, that, you know, that you cook and they enjoy, and you go, you know what, I'm going to teach you how to make this. They're excited. But when it becomes a chore for them, when it becomes a mandate for them, you take the joy out of learning, out of responsibility, out of wanting to do it, or everything. You know, it's a crime for them, because what they could learn from it turns out to be a big drop from flourishing, okay, to resentment. And you get a lot of people who grew up as older children who don't want children, who resent the idea of other people's children. So you actually remove a person that could have been a potential village because they have such a resentment for it. And you did it to them. So we can't quote. There is a big difference, and it's already a very delicate situation where it could go either way when you're teaching children how to go one step further. Because if you have gotten them to the point where they've already seen too much or have done too much, it's going to be hard to unring that bell when you're tired of what comes back at you and say, oh, no, you stay in the child's place. How? How exactly is that mother of the 11-year-old girl you're talking about going to be able to tell her child, stay in a child's place when it suits her? You can't unring a bell. Once they've seen it, they can never go back to being what they were or should have been.
I agree. And I definitely agree with that. You took away the village. And it's imperative that we instill that village in the generation that's coming up. Don't have them unnecessarily watching kids that aren't theirs, because all it's doing is putting on them, I don't want any kids. I'll never have kids because I've been watching my little brother for the past 3-4 years. I'm tired of watching kids. Now, that's one thing. I was the baby. My mother only had 2 kids, but I never had or was forced to watch anyone's kids whatsoever. My mother, thank God, she allowed me to enjoy my childhood. She never forced anything upon me before time. I washed dishes. I had to wash dishes. I learned at an early. I was 10 when I started washing dishes. She made sure I learned how to cook. I had to keep my room clean. I had to make my bed up. But it was one of those that everything she taught me was never beforehand and never to the point where I just didn't want to do it. I was
That's order. That's order. It's like getting an allowance. If you did your chores, you earned your allowance. It's for those of us that were fortunate enough to be able to afford allowance. If you do your chores, at the end of the week, you get this. If you slacked up on anything during the week, that comes out of your check or your allowance. It comes out of it. If I had to speak to you 4 or 5 times about something that you know already, that is a consequence. So that's one of the things. Now, there's another situation that we've spoken about, Erica, as well on the boards and everything, as a black community. Now, this is a universal situation. Okay, but we now can go back to the fact that as a black community, most of the things that white America has in a situation like this, we don't have. So for us to deliberately put our own foot in our own sandcastles, okay, is making it worse. Not only is the village, like we just spoke about, robbed because that person is going to grow up resenting children of any sort, but let's speak about the fact that if you can remember, younger children who are sort of like maybe 14 or 15, they were able to babysit neighbors' kids or whatever and make a little money for themselves. So now you took away their desire to be able to give themselves an option of learning, because that was something that was a big lesson, because it taught a child how to value a dollar because they made it, how to feel proud about doing something and getting something back for it.
Mm-hmm.
Now that's been taken away. Okay? Then not only that, if all you did was look like you were having fun while they were resenting their life, as you said, having more babies, and now I'm the babysitter. You took away this person's right to attach themselves to their siblings and have any natural love, because they don't see this as a joyous addition. They see this as a problem. If you can go to the store yourself, you don't give your kid your card or your money and say, go do it. Even though, like I said to you, single mothers that have no choice, this does not apply to you. And for your new listeners, my motto is, if the shoes don't fit, don't step into them, because I'm not referring to you. I've been there. I've done that. I know exactly what it is. When everything that you would try to do in the proper fashion, being a single parent, because that person walked out and you have no choice but to try to work with the good of the all over the good of the few. But when you are sitting up there and you know you can and you just don't, there's a problem. There is a problem. And now what our ancestors taught us as valuable lessons in life has become something that becomes a state of war between parent and child.
Now,
because, you know,
you know, one of the things is, you know, I talked to one of my close friends, and she told me today that she was about to be a grandmother. Now, her and her man, they've been together for about 10 years now. They're trying to have a baby, and she's about to be a grandmother. Now, her son is 20. She had her son when she was 13. She went on to get a bachelor's degree, rare case, but she had a village to help her once she made that, you know, decision or mistake or whatever you want to call it, to have sex and get pregnant at the age of 13. Like I said, she had her parents behind her. She ended up going to school, getting her bachelor's degree, but her son, who is now 20, is about, he's married, and his wife just found out she was pregnant. I said to her, I said, oh, congratulations, you're about to be a grandmother. She said, no, I'm going to be a yaya. And I laughed, because no matter how you chalk it up, you're a grandmother, no matter what you name you put behind it. But I'm thinking to myself, we have a generation, and this is also what happened, where in the 90s, maybe late 80s, in the 90s, where we had these teens that had kids. And they had kids at 13, and their parents were in their 30s. And their parents weren't trying to be their support system or their village. They were trying to still go out and club. So their parents looked at them as, I didn't have this baby. Didn't nobody tell you to go out and get pregnant? I ain't staying at home and raising no babies. I still want to party. So they don't get that village concept, because when it was their turn to need a village, the village had disappeared, because grandmother still so young that she wants to party. She don't want to stay at home and help me with my child, even though I need to finish high school. She don't want to, you know, she don't want to get, you know, put in her part or play her role to help me be a parent. So that's another reason why that village was, a chunk of that village had gotten lost, because of the teen pregnancy. The teen pregnancy rate was so high until, you know, The grandparents, they didn't want to have to fool with a grandchild, because they was looking at it, I'm just at a point in my life where I could be going out and enjoying myself. I'm not about to sit down again. I just was sitting down for the last 14, 15 years in the house with you. Now it's my turn. So you had that selfish complex that took away the village.
Absolutely. And then now on the other hand with that there goes that double-edged sword in that situation. Now your child went out there and got pregnant way too early, or impregnated somebody way too early, because it's a boy and a girl situation here. Mm-hmm. All right? Now, this child is still trying to learn the facts of life for themselves. Now, they have to learn quickly for their own child, and then you are still in that stage of having to teach them. And you're talking about, I'm not sitting down. Now, I'm going to say one thing about that. To a point, I agree to that mentality, but to this angle, okay? If your son or daughter did play big grown-up games, and let's say that you were a parent that taught them all of it because you were in that situation yourself, and you can give them the firsthand knowledge of the bad effects of that. Now, if that child has already deduced in their head that I'm going to have this baby, my mom's going to be, babysitting, and I could still be a child, then I can understand grandma saying that, even though I don't support them, even in the midst of that, just abandoning the village part of their role altogether. Because there's no way in hell that you're going to be a smart mouth teen for whatever you're going through, have a baby, and then come back and figure that you don't have to be a parent. That biology only, and then grandma's going to take care of it. I understand that. All right, but on the other hand, I don't agree with a parent saying, I want to go out there and party. This is your responsibility. Because regardless to what, you're still a parent. That's the other mentality we have as parents now. Getting back to how this affects us on a Black American level, society has made it damn difficult for anything but, okay, economically we know that they cut everything possible that we could possibly have as a little bit of a start in a press situation that they create and continue on with. So we have nothing but single parenthood because our brothers are out there with the conditioned mentality of, listen, I'm just supposed to breathe, feed, and keep it moving.
Mm-hmm.
I can't get a job anyway because, you know, whatever, so I just can't deal with it. Because men on the whole don't have the endurance ability that we have. They don't have the strategic abilities we have to work with a pot of water, a stove, rocks, and a couple of spices and make a soup out of it. They already don't have that, so they get frustrated quick, and their ideas would be to hell with it, leave it all alone. So society's put that on us. Then there's no way we can get proper jobs because the people that we're going out there to look for is putting a hoop that we have to jump through educationally while they're stealing our educational systems or putting in curriculum that makes no damn sense and mandating us to follow it. So there's a frustration there. So everything that we have as a black community and we don't fight for our rights or stand up beyond our fears to fight for doesn't give us much of a battleground to start with to give our children this balance, per se. Our ancestors had it because they still came from being financially sound because they thought more of saving and getting houses and still keeping the family together. We had fathers and mothers that didn't believe in nobody rolling their eyes under a certain age. To this day, I'm 44, and my father, I don't suck my teeth, roll my eyes, or point my fingers in his direction, even if I'm stating my point in a firm manner. So there are plenty of things. I see you there, Cole. I'm going to bring you in just a minute. There are plenty of things that even as grown-ups, the strong structural foundation we had in our generation, we somehow, some way cut it short. I don't know if we resented the corporal punishment aspect of our discipline growing up, even though we understood it and we're better people for it. But we have definitely dropped the ball, and as a Black community, we can't afford to do that. And let me bring in our other panelists. Just give me a second. Welcome to the show, Paulie.
Hey, what's going on?
Hey, Professor.
Hey, it's Professor Carl Tone Jones. I'm driving on some bumpy roads, so you have to forgive me for the background noise.
All right, well, don't go crashing on the air, okay?
No, don't worry about it. At least I have some witnesses.
Okay.
So I've been listening in off and on throughout the show, and this is a subject that's really near and dear to my heart because I was one of those children who grew up in a household where I had to assume adult responsibilities at a very young age.
Right.
Now, you know, you have to understand each situation is different in its own right. So to put every egg in one basket, I think would be a little unfair when we're doing the analysis as to how this actually impacts the household. But if we want to do some generalization, we can definitely look at what's going on from generation to generation. And as I believe Erica was saying earlier, she was in a situation where she was dealing with learning chores and responsibilities, but her grandmother was present. So several generations ago, we would have three and even four generations under one roof. Now, what you would have there is an institution of familyhood in the community that we had. We you know, the black community was never big on that whole nuclear family idea. But the whole concept of raising children back then was when children learned chores, it was done under the supervision, the watchful supervision usually of the head matriarch of the house, which usually was somebody's grandmother in the home. And the grandmother herself would take on the responsibility of in teaching and nurturing the children so that they could be prepared for the day when they would have to, as you know, the old saying, go leave the nest. So when we would leave the nest, we would be prepared to be able to fend for ourselves. Now you flash forward about 25 years or so, and you talk about two to three different generations have gone by. Now you have a lot of single-parent households where there are no elders in the home. And what you have is you have when you have the youth now taking on those roles of the parental responsibilities, what you see is that there's some abuses going on here, abuses of destruction of the system, because we know how the system was made or how we functioned when we were younger and we had those responsibilities, but we're ill-equipped. A lot of us have been ill-equipped to impart that same type of system or wisdom onto our children as we get older. So it turns into a system where we're just taking advantage. But the downside to that is you do have some remorseful children who grow up, I'm sorry, not remorseful, but angry, who grow up with feelings as though they've been taken advantage of. And in addition to that, you also offset the balance of the household, because let's just take it, you know, the way it normally works out. If it's a young man who's being raised by his mother and he's given those types of roles as leadership in the household, he's assuming the delegations that used to go to dad. Well, dad is not there, so I'm stepping in and I'm wearing dad's shoes. Now, the conflict comes into play as to when he gets too big for mom to redirect, or to pull the rein back in, the rope that she gave him in order to assert his authority. You know, that's what we're dealing with out here in the streets. Then you have all these young brothers and sisters out here in the streets who pretty much were raising themselves. And they got to a point where the parent lost control of the authority role because they gave that authority and they gave too much authority to these children. So that's one aspect of it. There's several others that, you know, we could talk about, but that's probably the most common aspect of it all, is when you have the youth gaining too much control and then without any proper direction or guidance, they themselves become the leaders of the household and of their own domain, and there's no control there.
Absolutely, Professor. And you alluded to something that is very important. When daddy is no longer in the house and the male child has leadership roles. Now, listen, leadership needs to be taught for all the sakes of positivity that Erica mentioned, that we've grown up with, that we were taught, leaving the nest preparation. The problem becomes, like you said, that now they've assumed in their mind that being given a task means it's their responsibility. There was a point in time where my own son started to feel like when he was going to the store, or if there was a day that, say, I was down, be it from, I don't know, back aches or whatever the case is. If I said today I'm going to have you do the shopping because I can't do it, we don't have the car like we had before, whatever, so here's a specific list, he started to take it into his head that I have to support my family. And I had to get to the point of saying, no, your job is to do what it takes to keep the household operating, but it's not to support the family. That's my job. My job is to figure out how the bills are going to be paid, where the next meal is coming from. Your job is just to go and do whatever it takes to get it there based on what I tell you to do.
Mm-hmm.
When I speak,
And another issue that comes into play is, and unfortunately, you know, it's more common to have a single mom than a single dad. That's just the real of our situation in our community. But when you look at those situations and you break them down, how often does it become a thing where mom is out dating and the date or whoever the male that she's dating all of a sudden sees that he can pretty much have his way, but he just has to get rid of the children or whomever is in his way. And now it's a situation where there's a confrontation that's brimming at the surface between the young man and anybody else that mom is dating if they happen to cross paths, especially within the home. You know, you have a situation like, I'm not sure if you remember the movie Baby Boy. Where Tyrese didn't particularly care for mom having a boyfriend in the house. And when Melvin came to the home and Melvin was in the kitchen, you know, cooking breakfast and drinking all the Kool-Aid, you know, Tyrese had a fit. You know, there was some issues, there was some boundaries being crossed. And that's what comes when you don't have when you don't set those limits and parameters. First of all, I think a lot of times in those situations, you know, there needs to be a conversation that takes place before a male is brought home to any single parent household. And I think that a lot of times people rush past that because emotions get involved and that situation can get a little messy. But when you analyze the whole dynamic, it's really about the system, and I keep coming back to it, nothing that we deal with that doesn't have at least some increments of the system of racism, white supremacy. Now, there's another movie that I think people need to check out, and it's called Claudine. And if you ever see the movie Claudine, you'll see systematically how black men are removed from the households, even black men who don't care, who aren't necessarily the natural fathers or the birth fathers of the children. When they come into the homes or the forefront, they're systematically removed because of the systems that are set in place that benefit single mothers. And there's another aspect to the single mother dynamic that I think we need to address, and that's the whole black feminist movement. And I know that for some women, they have a hard time distinguishing between strong black women and black feminism, but there's definitely a difference in that. And when we talk about the black feminist movement, which took part, which followed the lead of the feminist movement that was created by the European women in America, you know, you find that a lot of the time the black feminists and the white feminists didn't even get along. But in order for the black feminists to get support from the white feminists, they had to always ostracize the black male. And what happened was, you know, that whole single independent women's movement was spurred from the whole idea of black feminism. And I think that's something that's very dangerous for our community, and we need to really look into that because, as you see nowadays, when you have these children and these households growing up without a significant parent or missing a significant component of parenthood within a household, that leads to an unbalance and it leads to instability in the community.
Absolutely, Professor. Now, I've been, you guys know I can't stand reality shows that portray our community to be in the light that white media allows us to be portrayed. But in particular lately, I've been watching and following Love and Hip Hop Atlanta because there's one couple in particular that piques my interest because there's a lot of the true components of who we are as a couple, the representation of strong black love and, you know, and everything that's in there. Plus, there's a village involved, but the village is actually becoming a problem. And what gets me is that we have gotten to the point of not knowing what is sacred and where the boundaries are, and this goes to our children as well. And that is Rashida and Kirk, okay? Here's the problem that I have with that, and I don't know how many of you are familiar with it, but Kirk made mistakes, okay? He cheated on his wife, and that's what happens when you're in the media. You know, you got access to all this power, and people just faint at your name and all sorts of stuff, okay? Now, he's cheated, but however, he is really trying to save his marriage. He has done everything a real man would do, or a person who's truly sorry would do, and there's this mom that's involved. Now, Rashida is very close to her mother, okay? She values her mom's advice, but this woman, I can clearly see, was either burned by her own relationships or whatever, but it is now Rashida's position to say, Ma, listen, I love you and I respect you and you are part of my life, but I am married to this man, and you have to allow respect to come to my partner because of the fact that this is our child. And one of the things I think that gets me most is this, because this alludes to what you're saying, Professor, about the black male being removed from their role, okay? And one of the things that comes up is he has a problem with his mother-in-law kissing his newborn in the mouth. And she tells him, you don't know what I do when you're not here, and don't tell me what to do with my baby. Now, that is a problem we have in the black community. This is not your baby. I get the situation, but this is my child, and this is his father. And when we get to that point, and then he gets frustrated and walks out, we're left now with exactly what white supremacy has put down on us, with taking away everything that we have as peanuts for quality of life start. So those boys are going to grow up believing, just throw up your hands and walk away because the women are always going to have their mouths and their mouth is the most powerful. This is not what you want. But getting back to where we're speaking on how these children now take on the roles is this. Now that mother is going to get frustrated with being a single mom. Now that mother is going to have to start doing the things that could have happened if this relationship could have worked. And now that child, because she too is a star or a recording artist, when this child gets older, our older son, what's going to happen? Now he's got to take on the role of protector. Now he's got to take on the role of being the man of the house, quote, end quote. As parents, nowadays, I believe that we definitely put too much on our kids. Now, I had a lot of people in the pre-broadcast question saying, nope, I was taught responsibility and I never was deemed myself too responsible. I'm not speaking about you having a great sense of being responsible. I'm speaking about the fact that instead of you having to cook dinner on a night mom's working late, you have to cook dinner, period. Or the parent that doesn't want to do anything, who has no responsibilities, as you alluded to, Erica, simply now looks at that child as, this is a worker bee. Now I can relax because they could do it, and they have to do it because if I tell them so, they will. And in doing that, you've caused this person to be bitter. You've caused this person not to want to grow up and have the natural, inevitable things that happen with life and the natural flow of things. You took away a village. You took away that person.
You know what, Katie? That's why I think we see a generation of what I call bitter young girls because of that independent woman that don't need a man. She's so independent until she doesn't realize that she's raising her daughters to resent men. Instead of her letting her daughters see, I can't survive and I'm not surviving because I don't have a man. She teaches her daughter, oh, we can survive because we don't need a man. They reflect
absolutely.
They reflect, they take that bitterness and instead of making it a positive situation to say, look, baby girl, this is why a woman needs a man, because I can't do this by myself. You see how I'm struggling here and there and in this area and that area? If I had a significant other, things wouldn't be as hard. This is the importance that of the role that a man plays in the family, and teaching her son that instead she's so angry about her situation, she teaches her daughter in the wrong way as to why she don't need a man. I tell people often that the black Christian woman in this country are, to me, the only one I hear hollering, I don't need a man. If that's what the feminist movement taught us, we are the only subgroup from that culture that says, I don't need a man. Because even a white feminist, even a white woman is going to say, oh, her man is the king of her castle. She needs her man. She can't survive without her man. She's going to treat her man like he's the best thing in the world. But the black Christian woman, and another reason why I can't grasp the concept of it all, is I tell people, I was created for one purpose and one purpose only, and that was to be some man's helpmate. God didn't create me to be anything other than a helpmate. And whatever duties those entail, that's neither here or there, but my sole purpose of being here is to be someone's helpmate. So this whole notion of I don't need a man, I'm too independent for a man, we have to stop it, because what we're creating is a whole generation of men who don't feel needed, and there's not one man on this earth that can look me in the eye and say that they don't feel some type of way when they hear that they're not wanted or needed.
Absolutely.
So we have to get out of it.
You are brand new to this show, but Professor, you have been here when I spoke about the rise of the independent black woman. It's a culture that is nothing but self-destructive, and I got a lot of flack from women who, oh, my God, like how clouded has our judgment become where we can't see that there is a need for our counterparts, period. I see you, caller. I'll bring you in a minute. But I'm going to say this. There's a difference between being able to do it on your own and not needing somebody to help you through it. There is a difference with saying, if my man is down, I could handle this. Okay? There is a what a hot reaction you get when you say the words as a woman that I'm going to submit to my man. What the deal with that doesn't mean you're going to bow down like some, you know, kimono-wearing Japanese person. What you're saying is, okay, I can hear your point. I still have my say, but eventually I think I'm going to give you the opportunity to play your role and see where it goes. We tend to think that the word submissive means that we bow down, we're in chains, we're in ropes, and they're dragging us across the field somewhere.
I agree.
The same way I allude to non-traditional lifestyles, when I say that no matter what you can do, despite the idealism, quote, unquote, of a situation, doesn't mean that you don't need help. For example, when I was speaking about same-sex couples adopting a baby, I don't care what you dress up in. I don't care what operations you've had. If you are a same-sex couple, you can never teach a daughter how to be a woman, nor can you teach a man how to be a boy, how to be a man, when you're a same-sex female couple. So you have to open up your mind to understanding that I am capable of loving this child regardless of the fact that I'm either by myself or with a non-traditional partner. But we need help. There are things that we don't know, that we can't do. Women, I don't care how independent you are, there is no sperm shooting fingers that got you pregnant.
We don't self-pollinate. I tell people that. Trees and plants, they self-pollinate. We're mammals. We need one another, period.
Exactly. Exactly. No matter how much you have gotten whatever, there's certain things that even people who have gotten the operation to change into the opposite sex can never do. You can never bleed if you are a guy who turned into a woman. You can never get pregnant. Women will never be able to understand what it means to get up and yank your teeter after you finish urinating. You'll never be able to explain the emotional and internal, physical, natural thing that happens for a guy growing up. You can't teach a boy how to deal with not being able to measure up to what people say you're supposed to look like when you're 17 years old. How come I don't have muscles? Why don't I have enough hair on my chest? Why isn't my thing looking as big as the other guy? That is a male mindset. The same way a guy could never explain to his daughter why it's so important for her to feel she's a certain cup size by a certain age, or her friends are wearing a D-bra. A guy can never understand that. Mm-hmm.
You know, when we look back at the whole movement, you know, the single female movement and so forth, the independent, movement that only seems to ascribe to black women, because just as Erica said, white women, they cherish their men. And it's only when there's to be some type of attack on black men do black feminists get any support from white women. In fact, there was a debate recently, a Twitter war between black feminists and white feminists maybe 6 months ago, where white feminists pretty much told black feminists you don't have a leg to stand on because you really don't have any base or foundation for your arguments. And the it was a disconnect there that I think the rift is still there to this day. But we also need to look into who has funded these movements. And when you look and dig deep, you'll see the Rockefeller Foundation, you'll see the Carnegie Foundation, you'll see all of these different factions from you know, these white male supremacy groups that supported these movements that always lead to separation or some type of disruption in our houses. There's a lot of things that happen when you look at it from that angle, and you have to also recognize that in our communities and so forth, when it's hard to get a job, the number one reason that most people don't, the most relationships fail, especially when a child is involved, is because of the economic situations facing them. And a lot of times, even though I don't agree with the stance, a lot of men look at it as though financially I can't deal with this burden, and far too many of us skip out. I will acknowledge that far too many brothers skip out instead of sticking around. But there's always extra things at play here. And unfortunately, as we can pretty much allude to in the show, the children are the ones who suffer the most from this. And now we bear the fruits of all that venom that's been planted when you see the children who have to go through those situations.
Thank you for bringing it back to the topic title, because that's where we had to tie it all up. Absolutely. You have the fathers have left for whatever reason. And listen, this is not absolving those of you men that just take that notion and just say, huh, okay, I had my son, I'm out. But what I'm saying is that we as definitely as our community, we have to deal with this universal problem on an extra unique level. And that is the thing. Most of it is that we are forced to be single parents because we are facing an economic situation imposed by them where we don't have backup advocacy groups or privileged people or people that will protect us regardless of our flaws, because it's who we are, as white America has. There's no nannies. There's no places to go. There's no funded programs put in place to cover that part of the community that's an issue. There's nobody there to protect them. So when we are at the point of becoming a single-parent household, now we have to now add another burden to address and say, okay, now I'm a single parent on top of already being a parent, which is a hard job in the world. Now I have to do yet another thing to compensate for, because I have to do 100% of a 50% obligation, pretty much, with 25% tools. So the ratio to us is never right. So for us to deliberately be parents that sit back and go, I done did it already, so you know what? You do it. And you know what? You're going to do it because I said so. Not because I'm teaching you how you do this for your own benefit one day. And as you alluded to, Erica, it's stripped away from the value of it being a life lesson to it being a mandatory position for these children. Because we are so self-absorbed in trying to get back what we feel was taken from us, or move away from what we don't like about what we grew up with, or we're too afraid to deal with the elephant in the room in our situation, or we're just plain damn lazy about it because we have agendas that we shouldn't have as parents, and our children suffer. There is a panelist coming in. I want to give them their part on this first half because I need to go into the second half of the segment. Give me 1 second. Welcome to the show, caller. You're on the air.
Good evening, Lady Barnett, and good evening to the panel.
Oh, good evening, Deacon. Welcome back.
Yes, thank you. Thank you,
all
thank
right.
you, thank
Do
you.
Do you think that modern-day parents are putting more than just life lessons on their older children? You believe that they're making them adults typically?
So would you say that again, please?
Do you believe that they're making their older children adults too quickly?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do. I truly do believe that. You know, because as far as the child goes, growing up is, a part of growing up is learning. And if you're not being taught anything, the mind seems to disintegrate because it's not being fed knowledge. So it's nothing like it used to be because you think back on how we were raised and how our parents and family members was always in our backs and in our face. So yeah, it's really lacking a whole lot when it comes to today's society.
The culture of the village is definitely gone, and I can say that. And I think the few of us that are still trying to maintain it or bring it back or at least implement it, we're being looked at like three-headed aliens because this generation doesn't understand that at all. Now, I do have to go to break because when we get back, now I want to start discussing solutions, and you know that that's the way I work. So now we know. Now we've all had our say on it. What are we going to do about it? That is the question. So I'm going to go out, guys, with Joe and Compromise and a word from our sponsors. And by the way, Troll, please hang up because you will not be getting on the show tonight. Yeah, there's two of them. Kwame Killian, too, is back. Hang up, dude, because you're not getting in. Joe with Compromise, be back after this.
All right.
compromises, lady.
You're listening to On the Edge.
Welcome back, everybody, to the On the Edge show with Katie Barnett and friends. Before I bring in our other panelists, let me allow this panelist to come in. Welcome to the show, Corey. You're on the air.
Thanks for having me.
Yes, can you do me a favor and get to the nigga part before you hang up real quick?
I'm sorry?
No, sorry, nothing. You've called here before. So please just get to the word nigga so you can get your nice little fame off the air and hang up, please.
That's a tad bit racist on your end.
Yes, and believe me when I tell you, you've called them the three different things, boys. So you can just get to it, and let's save us all time.
Ma'am, I'm not racist. That's not what I called here for.
Right. Okay, so state your case on tonight's topic, then.
Well, the parenting issue is nigger, nigger, nigger. Nigger, 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 nigger,
nigger,
nigger, nigger, nigger, nigger, nigger, nigger.
Well, Katie, this is Katie.
No, no, let him stay on, because he's actually a dumbass. And I'd like the world to know. Now, you got to the nigger. Did you say it 8 times today, sir? Thank you for listening to our show, because apparently, as niggers as we are, all you do is sit around this time of night listening. So do us a favor.
Can I suck on your
have
toes?
Have fun on your own, okay? Good night, and get off my
your
panel.
Asshole.
This has absolutely nothing to do with you.
Okay.
All right. Moving on to the important aspect. Don't even give them the time of day. I let them. You got to niggle. All right. Solutions, everybody. And now his friend is calling in. Boy, we are popular as hell. All right. Solutions, everybody. So here's my take on what I believe. You guys can chime in, add on, take away, or whatever it is. Hang on 1 second. Let me bring in this panelist. Welcome to the show, Corey. You on the air.
Hey, this is Carlos Elby Jones or Stilo Jenkins calling from D.C.
Hey, Stilo, there's a little bit of some background noise.
Hold on, really quick.
All right. My suggestion, Stilo, there's some noise coming from your end, honey.
Is that noise coming from my end?
Yeah, a little bit.
Okay.
My suggested solutions from based on, you know, little things I've tried, and I'm going to offer this out, is this. One of the things that I had noticed as, I guess, my explosive, unnecessary circumstances, or I should say it shouldn't have been a circumstance, when I started noticing that there was certain toll that was taken on my older ones, mm-hmm. I did was this. I started really amping up conversations between them, like to let them know that I acknowledge that it's kind of a hard situation or place to be in as an older child sometimes, but part of it definitely is teaching them things that they should know for leaving the nest, and as well as letting them know that as much as sometimes it's hard, there are things they have to do, A, because of the situation we're in, but before that, it's because it's a rite of passage. It's something that they have to do as they learn, even though the situation's kind of been amped up to sort of an abnormal type situation. So the next thing is that I try to do as much as I can to sort of give them back some normalcy. I think, Erica, you kind of hit the nail on the head with this point, which is you weren't forced to do things that you didn't want to do. Not what you had to do, but the extra things. You got to go do whatever it is you needed to do. Well, every time I got a day off or, you know, I was able to get a little rest in or whatever the case is, if my children asked me to go out and, you know, go to their friend's house or whatever the case is, or they wanted to go on a trip somewhere like the Great Adventures or whatever, movies, I definitely allowed them that and told them, listen, just go have fun, you know, enjoy your day out or whatever the case is. So I tried to, you know, re-implement a little bit of what they should be experiencing if the situation in itself didn't exist. So that was like two of the main things. At the same time, I had to lay down the law that, you know, there are responsibilities you're given and they should be kept in the place that you're instructed to have them, meaning that it's not your place to start thinking about the fact that in high school you need to get an extra job to pay the bills. I had to really sort of clear that up because I believe that at one point they started seeing how much I was suffering or whatever the case is. So they started feeling like, you know, they had to do something. And at 16 or 13 or 15, that's really not the mentality I wanted them to have. So I'm going to start with you, Deacon. Do you agree? If there's anything that you want to add or take away or expand on, now's your time.
Well, basically, before I joined in, everybody on the panel has hit the nail directly on the head. So I'm not in disagreement with any of the comments or anything like that. I'm in full agreement. But I just would like to see a lot of things change with today's generation, and the only way that can be for that to happen is up to us, and that's the elder statesmen. So we have to do our part and try and pull these young people back together.
Oh, excellent point, Erica.
Yes, the biggest solution for me is to, if you're in that situation where you're a single parent, mother or father, sit down with your kids and stress the importance of two-parent homes. Stress the importance of making sure you're compatible with the person before you decide to mate with that person, so that you won't leave anyone in a situation where they're left to do it alone. I often, since me and my ex separated, and we were separated actually before we physically separated, because his family used to pick at me and tell me, girl, you're a single parent mom. I used to sit down with my kids and tell them, hey, I have to do all this by myself. Make sure when you're in a relationship, before you decide to lay down and have sex and make a child with the person, this is someone you can see yourself parenting all the way from the age of birth to death. So I think that would be one of the key factors in, you know, teaching our kids not to mimic what we did. So they could say, I mean, see that my mom was stressed out or my father was stressed out because they had to do it by themselves. I don't want to be in that situation, so I'm going to stop that cycle of having kids and not being in a relationship or making some 100% compatible with the person before I mate with them. It's strange that kids are, you know, way smarter than what parents tend to give them credit for. They know way more than what we think. So make sure you have an open door, open floor policy with your kids at all times. So if the load is too heavy on them, they can come to you and say, hey, I'm doing too much. This is too much for me. Without them being fussed or being punished because we're not realizing that, hey, maybe they are a little too young to be doing this. Because all we know is we don't want the load on us. We have to remember if the load is too heavy for us, it's definitely too heavy for a child.
Absolutely. And go ahead, Erica.
And one last thing, make friends. With caution, make friends that are able to help you, that's like-minded, that's able to help you become your village.
Absolutely. Professor?
Well, I think in combining both Deacon's and Erica's points, I think we need to look at it from a community standpoint where we start to have and create parenting classes and programs and seminars that are ongoing for our young and independent single parents so that we can stress and drive these points home. I think that we need to look at re-educating ourselves and the community on the issues of independence and so forth within a relationship and the stress to roles of the fathers and mothers alike. I think we also need to teach the children the history as to how our communities got to such a state of disarray because one part is not disconnected from the other. You know, this is all part of a systemic web that is latched across different situations and scenarios. So to teach them how we got here through COINTELPRO, how we got here through the Department of Welfare, how we got here through the influx of drugs into our community, how we got here and to touch on something that you brought up earlier. This is just a sidebar real quick. You know, the institution of beating our children started on the plantations. But we can get into that in another story. So that's how, you know, us getting beatings and so forth and dealing with ourselves with corporal punishment, that's how that came into play. But overall, I think it's a situation where we need to create something. And let me say one more thing. We need to stop waiting for a catalyst, and we need to just start doing it. We need to start planning and programming. The one thing I'm really impressed by, Patrick, is that he's a self-starter, go-getter. So if he sees a situation, he's in it with 2 feet. And we need to be more like that when it comes to addressing the situations and concerns. We don't need the permission of the dominant white society to take care of our own and to address these matters as we see them for ourselves.
Absolutely. Stalo? Okay, I guess I lost Stalo out. I totally agree with all of you. And as I said, what I put out was pretty much what had started to work for me in my situation. It's just my way of network, you know, offering something that maybe somebody in that situation that's trying everything they can to do the right thing and still be involved and balance out that precious time with so little, that this is something that we can give them a base start with. Now, you know, with the exception of that little, I don't know, 6-minute ignorance interruption, we definitely have to start grabbing the ball back. But the most important thing for you parents is this. Regardless how tired we are, regardless how hard the situation is, regardless to what it is that we feel we're entitled to because we've done it all or the other half should be doing their part, you're in the situation, and regardless of what we feel should be done, your children are still growing, still watching, still moving, and still being affected by extremes. We have to remember what the balance was. Whatever it was that we were taught made us civil-minded to the point of we can value the hard part or what we thought was hard as a teen growing up with our parents. We have to try to remember that a lot of modern-day society is not offering us the same rich set of tools that we grew up with having, the uncles, the aunts, the older siblings, the grandmothers, and the father and mom in the household. We have to try to do all of that as single parents, and we have to do it in the face of racism coming back 3 times harder than we've seen it before. We have to do it with idiots like this showing up and being in your kid's face on a daily basis. We have to remember that we have to open up our permission to someone that we know that's taking a real genuine interest in the well-being or the welfare of our kids, because we can't do it alone, be it a single father or a single mother. Regardless of what, the word single obviously is letting you know that there's a reason why that was emphasized, meaning that something normal, a normal component of what it should be, was removed. So if we can't get the actual proper original fit, we have to go to the next compatible thing, and that is that village, that truly involved pastor, that truly involved teacher, that mentor from the Big Brother Boys and Girls Club, that male figure for your sons, that female figure for your daughters. Be it if it is a person in your life that you are dealing with now on a romantic level that really loves your family. Some things we're going to have to take our blinders off about our kids. No, my kid would never do that. Every kid would do that.
All right.
Every kid would do that. At some point, something in a person's life is going to cause them to do something that normally is out of character. We definitely have to stop saying, don't be talking to my kid like that, depending on who it is that said it and what they said. Sometimes you need to open up your ears, because if you're a single parent doing what you're supposed to do, 9 times out of 10, you can't be where you should be with it anyway. So you have to count on somebody saying, I saw your child do this. And you have to open up your mind to listen and see what it is, because we have to start allowing the people who are supposed to do it share the burden, so that the children who are supposed to be growing up to get little bits and pieces at a time can do it properly, can actually value and appreciate the lesson that's in rather than grow up to resent and be removed as the village that's still long overdue to be re-implemented. So, since the idiots are still listening, let's have a little fun. Professor, why don't you tell the trolls what you think of their little interference? Come on, let's have some fun. They do it at our expense all the time.
Well, what you think, what you hear is basically the recessive gene pool, the results of the recessive gene pool at its best. And not to dispel or to go in on the white community, because I don't have any feelings to the white community one way or the other. I don't dislike anybody because they're white, and I don't love anybody because they are either. And the bottom line is these people that are calling tonight are representation of that fear that we spoke of yesterday when we were talking about reparations, and that fear of how when the playing field is leveled as to how they will be obsolete in most situations and cases. When you look at how these incidents occur, it's just like history. It's just like through history. You know, the black community didn't go into the white community to start problems. There's always the problems and the destruction happened when whites decided that they wanted to come and pick fights in the black community. Well, you have a situation right now where you have people who are trolling your phone, trolling your radio show, but you know they're not paying. Nope, you don't see anybody from our community trolling the Bill O'Reillys or the Sean Hannitys. You know, you don't see anybody from our community trolling the Alex Joneses or the other radio show hosts that they have out there. Yeah, thank you. That's the one I was thinking about. The Rush Limbaugh, you don't see us calling their shows, patronizing them, or with such disrespectful or disparaging language, because we have better things to do, you know. And now that we're focused on building, see, if we would have been on here and talking job and things of that nature, they would never even call into the show. But because we're talking about real situations going on in our communities, real way to address them, and we're undressing all of their lies, now they're getting scared. And this is a scared response from little children or childlike minds and mentalities that can't comprehend dealing with a foe on an even playing field. So that's why you have them calling and trolling your shows, trying to be disruptive and so forth, because it represents the fear that they have. Just like Patrick was saying, just like I was saying last night, you know, the white community saw for itself, and believe me when I tell you, they're taught the real history in their homes. They're taught the real history in schools that our children aren't allowed to be in. That they know when the black community is given a chance or an opportunity, just a sliver of a hope, that we always come out on top and that we always succeed and exceed all expectations in any particular field and parameter. That's why they always try to keep us in check when it comes to sports, because there is no way to level the playing field unless you cheat somehow, some way. Other than that, you know, it's mano a mano, you know, skill against skill, man against man against woman. And what you have is, you know, we obliterate the competition. We have, like, what, 3 black golfers? And you know about 2 of them. You know we have, what, 5 black tennis players? And you know about all of them. You know what I'm saying? We have, like, what, 2 hockey players? And you know about both of them. You know, and don't get me talking about the NBA. You got, now, you know, the white community has to recruit all over the world to deal with athletes that are born in your backyard. You know what I'm saying? So, and that's just getting you go to the intellectual capacity, and you realize that 70% of the inventions that we use to endure the conflicts of today were created at the hands of Africans. And they
know
this.
What, Professor, you know, I always love your input. Erica, I'm actually interested to hear what you have to say.
You know what amazes me about and what made me have to take a look in this religion called Christianity? 9 times out of 10, whoever they call it was, calls himself a Christian. What part of your religion teaches you hate? That's my only thing. So for whoever's out there trolling, my one big thing to say to you is, what does your Jesus think of how you feel about black people?
Well, they feel that their Jesus would knock us off.
Huh?
They feel that their Jesus would defy all black people.
Oh, really? You're the Jesus that taught about love and healed for free and fed the masses for free, he hated someone? Because the Jesus that my people were enslaved to serve was all about love. He loved everyone. So to all the racist white people that's listening in and you call yourself a Christian, what would Jesus do? At the end of the day, like the professor said, we mind our own business. We've always been a group of people that minded our own business. I could care less about what a white person have going on unless he's trying to do something to hold my people back. Other than that, whatever they're doing, that's their business. Because I'm minding my people's business. Up until the point where you're discriminating against my people, you're enslaving my people by incarceration, you're putting diseases in my people's community, that's the only time I have any interference with what white people have going on.
Absolutely. Deacon? Okay, I guess we lost him. Stalo, are you there? Stalo? Okay, guess not. Well, we got a few minutes left, so I'm going to put my take on this. To those of you that are not African-American that have been gracing my show with your listenership, that don't believe that you are racist or you don't practice that type of hatred, but you do nothing, or you sit quietly in your cars and hush quietly talk about it and, you know, shake your head about how horrible it was, and you send private emails to discuss that you are not those people. Listen real hard to what representatives of your side of the world is saying on a show that talked about nothing but what our people are going through with our people. They are sitting there nightly, and this isn't the first time. They call with different, this is show how cowardly they are with their bold hatred. They call with Skype names. They call with unknown numbers. They call in groups because they can't even handle a black show without it being in a mob mentality. And what do we do but talk about what we need to do for ourselves? And it's a problem. They have everything in the world because more than likely they're sitting on some ridiculously expensive phone or iPad or laptop or tablet that they shouldn't have at the age of 17, but they do. Listening into a show this time of night, because all of that still isn't enough. And so my people, if you're not getting this on a daily basis, that no matter how many zeros they offer you to act like a clown on national TV, that this is what they truly think of you, then maybe you need to go get lobotomized in a laboratory somewhere and rejuvenate the thinking cells. They're sitting back listening, which is the way they did our ancestors. They circled around in some marsh somewhere in a boat watching how we took care of our own land and were happy with it, while they were busy capitalizing in their brains how many diamonds were in the soil that we raised our children on. And, of course, they saw big dreams, but they weren't going to work for it. So even if we leave them alone, they don't know how to leave us alone. You know what? You guys ready for a little more fun? Hold on. Welcome to the show, Cola.
Hey, this is Joe.
Hey, Joe.
Okay, did you take a look or look up those references I gave you?
Oh, I'm sorry?
Did you take a look at those references that I had given you?
Actually, that's not today's show, but I did.
You did? Okay. And what happened?
I will say exactly what I said before. The opportunities are definitely there. The easy access to them are not. There are plenty of black Americans that are successful. Do we get celebrated for it? No. Do those people that are in that position really reach out to us with easy access and open arms? No.
Okay. If that was the case, exactly what it is that your community does when it happens, by offering it to their offspring or to the next person next to them or to the neighboring businesses to make sure that you, that all of you flourish and continue to flourish, if that was the case, we would have that easy access and that open information and those open arms in our community where you would see it on a daily basis, where you would see it on a continuous and frequent basis.
Well, you can't say you have the opportunity and then say you don't have access to it, because an opportunity means you have access to it.
No, so, we have access to it.
Okay.
But then when we get there, there's like a bait and switch. You know, like when you go and you read a little article in the in an ad.
Oh,
and
I see what you're saying. Okay.
Hold
on, Katie, because I've been pretty much waiting for this opportunity for quite some time.
Mm-hmm.
Joe, let's just be clear about something, because last time we had this.
Before I get muted, do you have? I want to get asked
you
a question.
I don't. Wait. Let me please clarify something, Joe. I don't mute you unless you're talking in the middle of somebody else's sentence, because I have no fears about people disagreeing. That's what the show is about, for us to have our viewpoints. So please don't say that I mute people as if I only want people to come in and join me in some kumbaya discussion.
Okay.
All right, moving along, Professor, you have the floor, and Joe, you can reply.
Okay.
So, you know, you throw all these things out there, and let me ask you a question.
Mm-hmm.
If you personally were dealing with a situation where you had to work twice as hard or 3 to 4 times as hard to maybe get an opportunity that somebody is pretty much guaranteed, do you consider that an even playing field?
No, here's my question. What particular talent do you feel that you have that Whitey is keeping you from benefiting you?
Well, first and foremost, it starts before you get to my stage. First of all, and I'm an excellent teacher, and that I haven't said anything about the fact that anybody stopped me from doing anything. But the bottom line is, there's always more roadblocks, there's always more
If nobody stopped you, then you can't say then there's roadblocks.
But there has been times where I've been stopped. There has been times when I've applied to teach at different colleges and universities,
mm-hmm.
and haven't gotten phone calls. There have been times.
And that's because of racism.
Well, I can see that I'm more qualified than some of the people that are in
there. How would you know?
I'm not saying, listen. Let's not play games here. Let's not pretend that these things aren't institutional. Let's not pretend
that
these backroom companies.
I'll answer your question.
Whoa, 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 whoa.
May I ask a question,
Professor,
may I ask a question, please?
Okay.
Joe, let me ask you a question.
Go ahead.
Do you deny by any means at all whatsoever that the society is uniquely blatantly offensive to blacks? I'm not talking about the 2 or 3 or 4 successful people that you claim that you have met and talked to in the corporate community, all right? But do you deny that the way that the justice system treats a black defendant versus a white defendant who committed the same crime is not unfair? Do you deny that?
No.
Okay. Do you deny that when a black person goes into a bank that may not have the super over-the-hill comfort pad, but has the collateral or a good business solid plan in place, is showing some stuff, that they're not going to have to give, let's say, for lack of a better analogy, they're not going to have to give, say, a 5-page business proposal, as opposed to their white counterparts getting in with a 2-page one?
I wouldn't know about, and I doubt if anybody
Joe, this is one thing I'll say.
Oh, boy, look.
I can't even talk about, whoa.
I teach humanities, and I teach discrimination,
all sorts of things, leadership courses. I can't even talk about race in my class without getting a phone call and a reprimand from the associates that govern my position.
Well, neither can anybody else. Liberals can't do it
either. That's not true at all. That's not true. We speak about race every day. People talk disparagingly about race, but you talk in code.
All right. Let me ask both of you a question.
Okay. Let him ask this question, Professor.
Okay.
Go ahead, Joe.
Let's say there's an accounting firm, and
mm-hmm.
they're putting an ad in the paper, and 100 people show up for the ad, just for the one job, one accounting job. Now, if 95 of them are white and 5 of them are black, and the black people are about on par with the white people. According to both of you, who do you think would be hired?
The white person.
That's a troll.
Okay.
So
well, then,
question.
Is that racism?
No. Let's deal with the question you just asked. Okay. First of all, why is there only five blacks showing up to that position? For one. Okay. The average school district in inner cities do not even teach math past algebra one. So you graduate from high school. So the black members of the black community, most of the time, 9 times out of 10, aren't even accentuated to those types of situations or jobs because institutional racism that presides over the school districts don't even allow for that type of instructional curriculum to take place. So that type of learning doesn't take place. So when those students get to college, they're already set behind. So they have to take remedial courses and remedial classes just to catch up to that point. So that's a trick question.
You're interrupting.
That's a trick question.
Not a trick question.
Allow him to finish his point, Professor.
Okay. So is that racism? If 90 show up or 95 show up that are white and the other ones 5 or 10 are black.
Katie. Real talk. I'm not going to feed into this BS because
all
this is a typical argument for white supremacy.
I'm asking
this
questions.
This is what happens.
You don't want to answer my questions. You've
This is what happens.
Goodbye.
How are you going to form and shape a situation? How are you going to form and shape a situation? Yes.
Okay, let's go with your numbers, Joe. 95% of the candidates that show up are white, and or 95 white show up and 5 black. All right, let's say that out of all of those 95 white people that all have decent resumes and by process of elimination, some of them have more qualifications than the other. Okay, so now they're in the let's say the callback pool of candidates. Now, of the 5 blacks, about 3 of those blacks have equal educational qualifications, job experience qualifications, probably got an extra edge with another type of something that would help this business over the white candidates that remain in the pool, okay? Probably went to a school of maybe a year more, plus did an extra vocational backup certification to go along with that specific field that's being offered, and they still pick a white person. You don't think that that happened often? You don't think that that would be considered racism?
Hey,
another question.
First of all,
for all of you that are out there, he didn't answer the question. I will say that.
I think he hung up.
Oh, he did. Yeah. There we go. He probably was the troll's daddy. Now, there's 3 minutes left, Erica, there's 3 minutes left, and you're going to have to make it quick.
Okay, white people are conditioned to not trust us from the beginning. So even if those 3 people that qualify, whoever's interviewing going to say, they're black, they might steal from us. So we're doomed from the beginning. Because
Being untrusted. Listen, they're conditioned to believe that the garbage they put out on us historically no longer exists. So I'm not even going to go into the specifics of all the things that we don't get. That for someone to sit there, he just admitted that there is unfairness toward blacks in particular, but yet still turned around and said that we're not trying to get the opportunities. Bullshit. And I'm going to say that, God forgive me for saying that word on the air. It's you know something? Maybe he's not a racist, which I'm not buying completely. But I'm going to tell you this. If you sit back there and you see it, you can acknowledge it, you could say it blatantly among the people who mandate you to be quiet, like you said, Professor, about the race word or anything pertaining to race, and you do nothing, and as a person who's in that field to make a difference, then as far as I'm concerned, you are not a person of any type of progress for anyone but exactly where you are right now. Until tomorrow night, everybody, be blessed. Be a blessing. Make a difference. Thank you for showing up, and thank you, trolls, for letting me know that I'm that damn important. Have a good night.
Good night.
Good night.
On the Edge, we'll talk
about real issues.